Welcome to For the Love of Books, That Didn't Happen in the Book, a podcast by North Lancashire Libraries.
Welcome back to our second episode of That Didn't Happen in the Book. With me, as always, is my very special guest. He is the Bobby Ball to my Tommy Cannon.
Oh, you're so good.
He is the Motley to my Dick Dastardly.
Hail to the pace.
He is Mr. Kitlin-Chicone. How are you today?
I'm okay. I've got a cup of tea and I've got my hand sanitizer, so I'm fine.
Well prepared. Yes. That's the motto. Is that the Scouts? Be prepared.
I was never in the Scouts.
No, I was in the BBs, but I couldn't do all the jumping hurdles.
I attempted the BBs because my mum couldn't afford a babysitter, so she sent me one night and we just ran about a church throwing a softball at each other.
Yes, but yes.
Did you do that too?
Probably. I was okay when it was this children's bit where you just did stupid games like dodgeball and throwing a beanbag.
Chucking beanbags violently.
Like, you know, you used to play that game where you were all sitting in a circle and somebody would have a beanbag and you'd all close your eyes.
No.
Yeah, somebody would close their eyes and somebody would come and steal the beanbag and you'd run and get it back off.
The Cumbernauld branch probably couldn't afford a beanbag.
These children have been
brats.
Oh dear. No, it wasn't for me.
Yes, no, it wasn't for me either.
So somebody's motto is be prepared, not the Boys Brigade, possibly the Scouts, but Perhaps. Neither of us weren't joiners,
no,
were we?
No, not at all.
Not joiners. We were leaders.
We were leaders and readers, more importantly.
Yes, which leads us on to the subject of this month's book.
What a segue.
Yes. Would you like to tell everybody what we've been doing?
Yes, we have been reading Murder on the Orient Express and watching half a dozen different versions of it.
And why did we choose Murder on the Orient Express?
Well, I think it's one of those books that everybody knows, first of all, and even if they haven't read the book, they know about it because they've probably seen the film, because for 10 years, literally 10 years, every bank holiday Monday, BBC One or BBC Two showed Murder on the Orient Express. You know, it's one of those films that everyone seems to know about.
Yeah.
Like Star Wars, I suppose.
And you've been a big Agatha Christie fan.
So, to give the listeners a little bit of perspective, I am such a big Agatha Christie fan. I cannot remember a time in my life when she wasn't a part of it. I used to be that weird little kid who watched Poirot.
Used to be?
Yes. On a Sunday night, and I remember in Primary 7, we were told by our teacher, you would have loved this, Andrew, we all had to write a radio script of our favourite TV show, and everyone chose things like Home and Away, they chose Neighbours, and I chose Poirot. Oh. And they got to reenact it.
My memory of Poirot in those days, and I think probably it would have been like the when they were adapting the short stories.
Yes.
It just made me think of dreary Sunday nights.
Yes.
It was like, you know, Songs of Praise, Antiques Roadshow, Last of the Summer Wine, Poirot. It was all dreary and beige and depressing.
See, I hate all those shows apart from Poirot.
Yeah.
I just used to stay up late at night and just watch it and love it. It's such a weird thing as well, because why would young kids love Poirot? But I did. I really loved. And I still watch those old episodes. Every now and then, I'll dig them out and rewatch them. And I think as well, years later, I'm not taking credit for it, but I'm pretty sure I got you quite into Agatha Christie, because I begged you. You were at a loose end reading, and I said, please read the Murder of Roger Ackroyd. Mm. And I said, don't look at the twist, just read it going in. And you got back to me like, this is so dull, what do you want me to keep reading this for? And then the twist
We won't say what the twist is.
No, we won't. And you became a fan. And we are such fans. We've been to see like loads of stage productions. We go and see
all
the films.
All with the same people,
all
usually.
All the same cast.
They always have a guy who was in Soldier Soldier.
I thought he was in London's Burning.
No, there's a London's Burning, I'm sure. There's a Soldier Soldier. Mm-hmm. There's Dennis Lill.
Oh, Dennis Lill,
who was in loads of them. And some guy who used to be a 1960s pop star was in a lot. And I also remember seeing
Adam Faith?
Off Drop the Dead Donkey.
Was it Adam Faith? Oh, no. Yes. So what have we seen on stage? So, because Andrew is also, apart from loving film, he also is a big theatre buff. So, and every time Agatha Christie's in town, he says, let's go and see it.
I've seen And Then There Were None. Did you see that?
Yes, we've seen it twice.
We saw
Witness for the Prosecution.
Yes. What else was there now?
We also got to see, it was, who was the one, they took Poirot out of it, because Agatha Christie, yes, when she adapted a lot of her books for stage, she would replace Poirot with, like, Canon Pennyfather.
Canon Pennyfather.
Canon Pennyfather.
It was Death on the Nile, and yes, he had renamed it Murder on the Nile.
And Kate O'Hara. Because I saw Doctor Who fans in the audience dressed as the Rani, who's an evil Time Lord that Kate played. So we saw her. We've been to see loads of them.
I've seen it. I've certainly seen a Poirot one since then. I want to say it was The Hollow, and it was somebody off of Casualty that played Poirot.
I think
I went to that myself.
Yes, that is one of the Poirot books I didn't really enjoy, The Hollow. Yeah. It was one of the rare ones. Murder on the Express is one of the favourites because, like most of Agatha Christie's work, perfectly plotted. She has a way of making unlikely events feel real.
I was reading that she had been asked at some point what her favourite, you know, one that she'd written was, and she had a big think about it, and she said that probably Orient Express was the best Poirot novel, just purely. I think by that point, though, she was more interested in, like, the mechanics of how it was all set up. It doesn't necessarily flow that well as a story on its own.
Yeah.
Because not a lot really happens.
No.
It's not like some of the other ones where somebody dies, they're investigating, there's another murder, somebody else dies. That doesn't really happen. She was more interested in how to layer the plot and...
It's one of her books where there aren't multiple murders. It's because they couldn't really have...
Yeah.
And I won't give anything away in case you haven't read
it. We will have to spoil it.
Yes.
Because I will be talking about how every adaptation has a different ending.
Yes, well, we're going to have to warn people about spoilers.
Yes, there will be spoilers. If you don't want to know who the killer is in Orient Express, then switch off. But quite frankly, if you've got to this point without knowing the twist, then you're probably never going to
What were you doing
it.
On you're a bank holiday Monday? You never really.
So... film adaptations. Oh, by the way, just before we move on from the theatre, Agatha Christie, the plays that we went to see, she adapted, all of those plays were her own adaptations of her own material. She never adapted Orient Express. However, someone has now adapted Orient Express.
Oh, really?
And it is on a massive nationwide tour.
Why did
later
she not
on
adapt
the year.
Orient Express? That seems like
I don't know. I think she thought about it, but didn't ever do it.
Maybe it's to do with the amount of cast there would be, like 12
Maybe.
People plus
it,
Poirot.
You would need a big cast, and also the fact that she was taking Poirot out of all the books. Not out of the books. She was taking Poirot out of the plays.
Yeah, no, of course.
So it wouldn't have worked if you'd taken him out of it.
So the book itself, as you said, you don't feel a lot happens in the book, but... It's all very deliberate and everything's in its place. And she really pulls a fast one on the reader, which all her best books do. The first film adaptation... So Agatha Christie books had been turned into films before, but they weren't to her liking.
Margaret Rutherford.
Oh, Jesus, Margaret Rutherford.
I don't know what that voice is.
To see a play you're supposed well, where it was Margaret Rutherford being confronted by Agatha Christie.
Not the real Margaret Rutherford.
No.
She was long dead.
They summoned her back.
Don't to me, Margaret Rutherford.
Well, they adapted some of her films, her books into films, but they were nothing like the books.
No.
They were like comedies.
Yeah,
those dreadful Margaret Rutherford films, which, by the way, a lot of people love and a lot of people adore them. But
they're very loose adaptations.
Very, very loose. Yeah. Loose, you know, is not the word. So the first major adaptation that was sort of to Agatha's liking is... the Albert Finney, Sidney Lumet version of Murder on the Orient Express.
Now, there's lots to admire and lots to like about the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. It's not my personal favourite of that kind of era of the films.
Yes. You preferred Peter Ustinov, didn't you?
My favourite's Evil Under the Sun. It's
I
the campus
love,
nonsense.
Evil Under the Sun. It's so ridiculous.
It is
they
so
hide
ridiculous.
In the book.
Yes.
They just don't hide
and,
it.
And
they
I watched the hide. I watched the ITV version again with David Suchet recently, and it's nothing like the film because the David Suchet one's just in a kind of boring, dull
studio.
Bit of England, you know, and it's all drab and looks as if it's going to rain any minute. It's not on an island with, like, Diana Rigg and Maggie Smith chewing up the scenery.
And they all wear shoulder pads, ridiculous hats.
So that's my favourite. However, I do like Orient Express, but it has something at its centre that has to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it depends... whether you enjoy the film will depend on this one factor.
I know what you're going to say.
And that is Albert Finney.
His Poirot is so strange. He's like, so the rest of the film, it looks the way I expect it to look.
It looks amazing, yeah.
I think the casting, it's an all-star cast. It's a huge, huge prime premiere cinema. But he is so strange. He's nothing like Poirot from the book. He's this very large, sort of gruff.
And lots of laughing.
Lots of laughing. Uh-huh. He's such a strange creation. And did he win an Oscar for that? Or was he nominated?
No, I don't think so. I have no idea.
You can email
he didn't,
us.
He didn't win an Oscar. Definitely didn't. But I surely wasn't nominated for that.
He's meant to be Belgian.
No, he's not.
He's like a pirate.
It's an interesting take.
I find it so odd. Like, David Suchet obviously is my favourite Poirot, but his version of Murder on the Orient Express, I feel, is less like the book than the film version.
Yes.
Because they're tying it into an arc. David Suchet, when he filmed Murder on the Orient Express, was coming to the end of his tenure in the role.
Yeah.
He had filmed, I think, virtually every book, every short story, and that was the end of his era, so they were trying to tie it in with a loose story arc.
And I think
about
that
justice and his
affects,
Christianity.
I think that affects the success of that adaptation because it covers the whole thing.
It's very dark.
It's very dark.
Literally, it's dark. Yeah. The film, it very.
It's Poirot being like depressed and unsure and all that kind of thing.
And he walks away at the end,
and
doubting himself.
We'll talk about all the different endings later on, but
it's like Clue.
It is like Clue. But it's just, it's not, I think because they waited so long to do it, you kind of anticipated something more.
Mm-hmm.
But because their kind of arc storyline was that Poirot was coming to the end, essentially, they flavoured it with that. And it's very dark, but it's got all that bizarre stuff that they've added.
Yes.
And that's another thing.
Is it in Istanbul or something?
So,
someone's been stoned.
Well, yeah, there's the bit where at the beginning is at the very now the very beginning of the film of the
TV movie.
When you read the book again, the book mentions what Poirot was doing over there, the case that he was doing, mm-hmm. in like three throwaway lines.
Mm-hmm.
Something to do with a military case, something committed suicide, Poirot solved the case. That's literally all the
same. Yes.
The ITV version developed this and gave you a scene at the beginning where you see him confronting the man. The man shoots himself and the blood splatters on Poirot's face.
That was
awful.
Shown on Christmas Day
awful.
In 2010.
And then we go from there to Jessica Chastain and David Morrissey in the streets. We'll say, like, looking to see what's going on because a woman has been chased through the street by men who stone her to death.
It is so bizarre.
We are in the first 15 minutes.
I watched that eating my Christmas dinner. And do you know, I remember it so well because my mum bought me a pair of ugly boots and I wanted to throw them out the window. And I said, you know what, I won't bother because at least Poirot's coming on.
And then you got that.
Yes, I got a woman being stoned, a man committing suicide and Poirot trapped with an ITV cast.
Yes, and none of that we've just described happens. That didn't happen in the book.
You have to explain to me as well, why on earth, going back to the film, the Sidney Lumet film, Albert Finney, what is a peep? He doesn't talk about pipes, he says a peep.
That's right.
You're got a peep!
Yes.
What's a peep? You have, he smokes his peep. Sorry. It's like, what Belgian speaks like that? It's like Chekhov from Star Trek. Like, what Russian speaks like that?
I know, you text me about this recently.
Yes.
You said, it's like he's on a different planet, never mind a different country.
Beamed down from a completely different book.
Yes.
From the rest of them.
Uh-huh.
You know, because at least some attempt is made to capture the essence of the
book.
That was
a
big deal with his film. They wanted to make a proper version of the book, but they cast him.
Interestingly, and I just rewatched the film this week, preparing for this, the thing that I realised is that the way that the film is structured sort of gives away that it's all related to the Daisy Armstrong case before the book does.
Yes.
The book doesn't give that away until halfway through when Poirot starts to put the pieces together. There's no build up to it. There's no mention of it beforehand. The film starts with this sort of montage of the Daisy Armstrong case and the kidnapping and showing you newspaper headlines.
Which is a change
and,
that actually works to his benefit.
It does,
sure.
But it means then that you're not, when Poirot starts to go, "Argh, someone has skipped out the window!"
And all that's Daisy Armstrong!
But you know that that's not the case because none of that would have been shown at the beginning if it had no relevance to the plot. So you kind of say to yourself, well, that's not what happened because these people have obviously had something to do with it.
So something I've got to point out as well, Agatha Christie and her, I'm not going to say guts in doing this because some people might see it as a bad thing. They might. There's a moral dilemma here because that was based on the Lindbergh baby case, which was how many years? About 2 years after that happened.
I'm not sure.
Everyone who read that book at the time would have known that was based on a real life incident and it would have had a strange kind of frisson. So I actually watched the film before I read the book back in the day. I actually read the book years later and I got it out of this library. I actually took out Murder on Orient Express from the adult fiction shelf before it was all sort of, you know, separated by genre in the library. Like we've got a crime shelf now.
Trivia. Hmm? What was the original American title of Murder on the Orient Express?
Murder on the Calais Coach.
Correct.
Is the Calais Coach. I need my passport renewed.
Because the coach that they're on is the Istanbul to Calais.
Right, okay.
Coach.
Right, okay.
And that's the other weird thing I think about. You don't really get this in the book, but in the film, in all the films really, the fact that it's all taking place in one coach is fine. But the train breaks down and there's no indication that there is another living soul on that whole train.
Yeah.
Really.
But then, sort of jumping forward a bit, one thing I will say about the Kenneth Branagh version of Poirot, now if we're talking about David Suchet's version changing the start of the book, you have Kenneth Branagh balancing boiled eggs on the table. It's the bizarrest thing. And what they did, I felt that film made good use of the space of the Orient Express train.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too much because the film's a bit more claustrophobic and so is the ITV version.
Yeah.
The Kenneth Branagh version, they're running upstairs, downstairs, outside the train.
Yes.
You know, he confronts them all at the end, the suspects out in the street.
Yes,
where
yes,
it's
nonsense.
Crazy.
Yes.
So they make
too much
space. Whereas I think, so something that I was thinking about as well, we both really like Peter Ustinov's Poirot.
Mm-hmm.
His Poirot was a very warm and cuddly version.
He's not... I mean, I don't... I think Albert Finney's probably, in terms of how he plays the part, is maybe slightly closer to the original.
Yes.
Because Peter Ustinov plays him as a kind of jovial... Santa Claus type character.
How do you feel about taking Peter Ustinov and putting him in the original film version of Murder on the Orient Express? Because I wonder if that would make... I love the film, don't get me wrong, but I wonder if I would enjoy it a bit more if his Poirot...
Yes,
the film's so dark that this nice, gregarious, kindly old, you know, Uncle Poirot type character, would he work? Or do you need harder-edged Poirot like Albert Finney, who's gruff and strange and bizarre?
Yeah, it's an interesting
like
point.
But then his version of Murder on the Express, if it was Peter Ustinov, they would camp it up even more. It would be Dynasty.
Yeah,
on
it wouldn't be as kind of dramatic,
no,
I suppose.
No, it would be like a television movie.
There's other differences between them that I noticed. Like, I found when I rewatched the Kenneth Branagh version recently, I enjoyed it more than I did the first time round. I think it's a much lighter in tone film at the beginning.
Oh yes, a popcorn movie.
And the stuff, he's quite good at
this. I always said, so our friend Claire, who we go to see these Agatha Christie plays with, who really helped to start this up by complaining 1 year about Carrie, the film not being like the book, she really loves the Kenneth Branagh original film. She's a Johnny Depp fan, but I think Kenneth Branagh's version of Poirot was almost a romantic hero. He's very dashing and he's pining for a lost love. That kind of thing, and he's got the big moustache. Now, the sequel we won't go into because their version of Death on the Nile is one of the worst. Let's leave that.
I love Death on the Nile. I love the original and everything, but the Kenneth Branagh version is
awful. Let's leave that for our future episode because we can really like kick into that one.
That takes us to how much do you change your lead character? Because we've already spoken how Albert Finney plays him, how Peter Ustinov plays him. Kenneth Branagh, as you say, is more of a romantic hero. Mm-hmm. But the Kenneth Branagh, it's the building backstory. He's pining for his lost love.
Yes.
In Death on the Nile, you actually see the girlfriend, yes. The nurse, and you have the ridiculous revelation that his elaborate moustaches are to cover up his scars that he got in the war.
Oh.
And we take it to extremes, I think, with the John Malkovich one, where when John Malkovich did the ABC murders, it turns out that Poirot was a priest whose congregation were massacred during the war.
This is the thing. So I actually really enjoy that version of Poirot, that the ABC murders. So what I really loved about that, I am all for, I'm not a purist in the sense that I don't think Agatha Christie's endings should be changed. I think they're perfect. I think if you're going to change an Agatha Christie ending, it has to make sense because her books are the best plotted ever.
Yeah.
But I also love watching an Agatha Christie TV movie or a film not knowing who the killer's going to be, because that was
now,
the thing, the
no,
pleasure.
You lie. Oh, you no, lie.
You're bringing it up.
Yes, of course. I'm bringing it up. I'm bringing up the awful ITV Miss Marples.
Oh,
no. And the worst of all, I think, or the one that made us go, was Nemesis.
Yes.
Where they changed the killer, the motivation,
yes.
The characters.
Yes.
I mean, it was the loosest adaptation that you could imagine that we had. Go on, say
what
it.
What was the one with Mike Baldwin from Coronation Street?
Oh, I can't remember.
Was that Nemesis?
I don't know. Nemesis was two words, lesbian nuts.
Yes. So basically, but that was more than Nemesis. They had also, at one point, a nun who turned out to be a slaver.
Yeah.
Who was kidnapping young white girls and putting them into slavery. Oh. It's ITV kept changing the endings, but making them so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like lesbian nuns.
Yes.
It was crazy.
I don't mind you changing certain things about things. Mm-hmm. If you're adapting something, I don't mind you taking certain liberties.
Yes.
You know, I'm not a big fan of making Poirot tortured and all this kind of stuff, but that doesn't affect...
Or making him a priest.
Uh-huh, that doesn't affect the plot itself. Uh-huh. But when you take a plot and you change almost everything about it, what's the point?
This is the thing. I actually don't like, and as a writer, this is going to sound so strange, but I don't like Poirot to have too much character. Mm. I almost like him to be like a force that just appears out of nowhere, says some really funny things, gets insulted even though he's the smartest one in the room, and then at the end he confronts them all. Yeah. I don't like him having too much depth. I think there's enough there. Agatha gave us enough to work with.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst Poirots ever, God bless him, because we've talked about all these different versions of Murder on the Orient Express. We haven't talked about the 2001 TV movie with Alfred Molina as Poirot. Poirot has, it's set...
Well, I don't even know if I've seen this.
No, you won't have seen it because it's never been released. Basically, it was a modern take on Murder on the Orient Express. Alfred Molina's Poirot is younger. He has dyed black hair. He has a love interest.
Does he have a moustache?
Yes, but he also has a laptop.
Well, great.
He has a laptop.
Yes.
Never mind the little grey cells. He has a laptop with AOL.com. So it's very much a TV movie, but it's just rubbish. And it got me thinking, I don't think a perfect version of Murder on the Orient Express has been made. I think I could cherry pick elements of all of them. I love the Sidney Lumet version, but I'm not a big fan. The Albert Finney Poirot is so strange. If I could maybe take a different Poirot, if I could take the David Suchet Poirot, and maybe put him in that, but obviously without the baggage of a story arc made for television.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if I could take the Peter Ustinov version and put him in the Kenneth Branagh version, I think you could remix a really good version of Murder on the Orient Express.
There's also interesting changes made. The basic plot in every version that I've seen, the basic plot is all the same. They never change the killer. They don't change the motivation. There's tweaks made. Is that because the story as it stands doesn't really require anything? It is quite a...
It's so intricate, Andrew. I just don't think... I think it's one of the few, because a lot of the BBC Agatha Christie's show at New Year and Christmas, they do change the ending, like Ordeal by Innocence. Mm. They changed the ending in that and made it, like, the husband, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
There's a lot of changes in the Kenneth Branagh version, like, just moments that are different, and... Also, they change from version to version. Some of the characters change. They don't all have the same name. They don't all have all of the same characters. Some of them are slightly different.
Monsieur
some of them are merged.
Is Bianchi, isn't he? Or Bianchi, something like that.
Yeah.
One thing I will say, so last year we went to see, is it Murder in Venice? Death in Venice? The which is not really...
It's Haunting
not,
in Venice.
Yes, it's not a Poirot book at all. It's very loosely based on Halloween Night. But I actually enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it because I thought it was the closest I've seen a horror movie with Poirot in it. So I did enjoy it. So it's not like... I'm not such a purist that if you change it completely... No.
But the moments that I noticed in the Kenneth Branagh one that were different were... And the one that really is ridiculous is where... So, at a certain point in the film,
mm-hmm.
Mrs. Hubbard appears with the dagger.
Yes.
That was used to kill the victim.
Yes.
And the... Albert Finney version, she just sort of appears holding it in her hand.
Yes.
And the music goes...
Yes, orchestral stuff.
In the book, she finds it in her wash bag
yeah.
and starts screaming. In the Kenneth Branagh version, she's played by Michelle Pfeiffer, and the dagger comes to light because she gets stabbed in the back with it.
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit
Which
too
is a bit too much.
Yeah.
And also the bit where... He's talking to, is it Mary Debenham he's talking to?
Yes.
In the kind of luggage carriage and somebody tries to shoot him.
Yes.
And then he gets chased out, is it Mr. McQueen, I think?
Yes.
And he gets chased out onto the side of the train and out onto the mountain. Mm-hmm. It's all a bit, it's as if they've went and it's a bit low stakes as it is. Let's up it a bit.
But you said that at the beginning, like about, you said that
yeah.
not a lot happens in it.
I
argued that you really couldn't because if there are multiple murderers, unlike our other books where the murderers are scumbags
yeah.
who want an inheritance yeah. or a rich country manor, this one is a very moral murder. The Poirot, he devises two solutions
yeah.
to the killing at the end mm-hmm. and they... And on some level, he doesn't agree with them, but he understands why
yeah.
they've done it.
So essentially,
so they can't
spoil
keep
the ending.
People.
And the end of the story is that so Poirot comes up with two solutions. One of them being that
Which is
somebody
genius.
Came onto the train dressed as a conductor, killed Mr. Ratchet, and fled the train, and that was all,
yeah.
and hid his uniform and everything else. The other solution, which is the correct solution,
mm-hmm.
really, is that everybody else on the carriage, apart from Poirot, murdered
They are all the
man.
Killer.
They were all in on it, they all plotted it. The man on the train who died was a horrible, horrible man who kidnapped and murdered a child years
sure.
ago, and her family, extended family, household, have all ganged together to get the justice that they deserve. And there's this thing of, you know, 12 men, a jury.
Sean Connery's
uh-huh.
comment, 12 people
yes.
tried and true.
Yes.
Like
so,
that.
And that is the same throughout them all. Mm-hmm. Again, so there's some slightly differences in who actually does the murder.
Mm-hmm.
Countess Andreini, who turns out to be the
Did someone
sister.
Not like, grab her wrist and help her stab him in the original
no,
film?
In
she's
the
very infirm.
She doesn't... No, you're thinking Princess Dragomirov.
Yes!
No, I'm talking about the sister of the aunt of Daisy Armstrong.
Yes.
She doesn't... In the book, she's the only one that doesn't commit murder because her husband does it for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not one of the 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some differences in the different versions. Obviously, in not Peter Nusinov, the Albert Finney version,
uh-huh.
Dr. Constantine's just a kind of weird... doctor
yes.
who doesn't contribute much apart from saying, oh yes, I think that's how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the David Sushi version, Dr. Constantine was part of the initial plot and is involved in the murder.
Giving him more to do.
In the Kenneth Branagh version, he's merged with Colonel Arbuthnot
mm-hmm.
and called Dr. Arbuthnot
mm-hmm.
And he's involved in it all as well. And it's him that stabs Michelle Pfeiffer in the back on
yeah.
purpose. So there's some variations on exactly who does it, but the basic idea is always the same. It's
yes.
always the 12 people, and it's always to get justice. The ending, I have to say, in the Albert Finney one, where they all come in to do it and they all have to say why they're doing it,
yeah.
is the campest moment of the whole film.
It's
this
brilliant.
Is for my son!
It is so brilliant.
For my man!
And they all just take turns like,
yes.
stabbing him to death on Bank Holiday Monday.
But just briefly, because we're coming to the end, we'll talk about the endings. So at the end of the Albert Finney,
mm-hmm.
he says, ah, here are the two solutions. I leave it up to you, Monsieur Bianchi, to decide which one is correct. And Mr. Bianchi, do you like my impression?
Yes.
Mr. Bianchi says, ah, I think the first one is correct, Poirot. And Poirot goes, ah! And then
it's
they
like
all...
he's in the room.
then they all just basically toast each other in a kind of weird end of a musical curtain call.
Yes, it's and like Poirot was like, yeah, who cares?
Murder.
He deserved it.
So that's Albert Finney. In the Kenneth Branagh, it's the same idea. They all have the same idea. He comes across the two solutions again. Mm-hmm. But in this one, he makes the decision which one of them he's going to go with. He goes away and thinks about it, and they all glare at him a lot from the side of the carriage. And he comes back and says to Michelle Pfeiffer, I have decided. I am going to tell the police that it was the first solution, because he decides that, you know, although what they did was a crime,
yeah,
he doesn't feel they should be punished for it.
Yes.
So he makes that decision. And the first one he doesn't, and the second one he very firmly makes the decision and ends up walking off the train,
yes,
going away, all happy, everybody's happy. And then we have David Suchet, where, and I swear to you, I watched it recently, I ran it back and watched the ending twice, and I still have no idea what he decides at the end of the film. He says to them, you know, these two decisions, and he comes to all this, and then they all end up off the train and they're all standing outside in the snow and you don't hear anybody talking. And
no.
He walks over to the police and everybody is all glaring at him from the side, and then he walks away crying.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea whether Poirot is that supposed to indicate,
yes,
that he didn't turn them in?
He did turn them in, and now
what is against his moral fibre.
Yes, this is what I love about David Suchet's version of that book, is that he plays the moral conflict. Mm. He really feels it in a way that,
yeah,
the other versions of Poirot don't,
yeah,
because his version of Poirot was very, very Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
he has,
yeah,
faith,
mm-hmm,
and he has a crucifix,
yeah,
and I remember some episodes where he talks about his faith to some of the characters,
yeah,
and you really get that sense that he has made a decision that's going to darken his soul,
yeah,
a little, if that makes sense.
But it doesn't matter, listeners, because he's going to be dead in about four episodes.
Yes.
Spoilers!
And that's part of, it's like a story arc that,
yeah,
they don't really have in the books, but
no,
because they decided to do Murder on Orient Express very late on into David Suchet's tenure in the role, which of course they would need to, because there's certain Agatha Christie stories like Death on the Nile that are so big because of those films, that doing them,
yeah,
people have a certain expectation going in.
So what do you feel then, as a kind of final thought, is the best way to end it? Is it the, oh, I'll let you decide? Is it, I decide to let you all go quite happy and trot away? Or is it the, I let you all go, but I'm so distraught that I have to walk away crying?
Well, this is the thing. Again, it's like what I said earlier. I think I could cherry pick moments from all of them and sort of remix it a little. I like David Suchet's version in the sense where you know the decision he's made, because we all know the book, we know how it ends. He lets them get away with murder,
yeah,
because he believes that even though he's there to serve justice, sometimes justice isn't satisfied by the letter of the law.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of David Suchet's ending where he walks away distraught because he's made a choice, but I would maybe dial back on his misery. And,
uh-huh,
I wouldn't have them all celebrating for a musical moment. I'm like, the orchestra playing, like,
yes, the drink beer.
He's let us get away with,
yeah,
murder. So I think there's a little bit to be said about all the different versions. And I can't even remember how Alfred Molina lets him get away with murder. He probably takes him out for a drink as well.
But yes, probably. He contacts the police on AOL,
yes,
on his laptop to tell them who did the crime.
And says,
that's
right, get over here.
That's what we've decided.
It's very American.
Oh, yes, of course he is. So yes, so Agatha Christie, I love a lot of the films. I do love the Peter Ustinov films.
Yes.
Just for the reasons that we already spoke about. I love Death on the Nile.
Yes.
As we said, Kenneth Branagh one's terrible.
We'll have to get to that.
We will. We could touch on that. One of my favourites, though, is, and it's a bizarre one, it's the, what's the one in the Folly?
Oh, Dead Man's Folly.
Yes. They made a TV movie of that.
Those TV movies
I
with Helen
love
Hayes.
Love it. It's got June Stapleton,
mm-hmm,
playing Ariadne Oliver,
mm-hmm,
in a kind of ridiculous way. But this is the weird thing about the Ustinovs. The later ones still had him playing the same character, still had him playing him at the same age, but they were in the present day.
Yes.
So that would make, really, that would make Poirot about 150.
But then they used to do that. There was a phase for a while,
yeah,
of very 80s looking TV,
yeah,
movies. So they did a version of Sparkling Cyanide,
yeah,
which I actually quite,
yeah,
liked, even though it looks like an episode of The Golden Girls or Dynasty, that sort of 80s American television. Yeah. They also did, so Helen Hayes is Miss Marple. She did a version of They Do It With Mirrors. Yeah. Or Murder With Mirrors, as it's called.
And then, of course, we had the Angela Lansbury, yes. The Mirror Cracked.
Now, I quite like The Mirror Cracked.
No.
But Murder With Mirrors.
No.
Murder With Mirrors with Helen Hayes and Bette Davis, and you can feel the malevolence of Bette Davis in every scene. She hates Helen Hayes, and Helen Hayes hates her. And they've got to sit with each other and talk to each other like they're the bestest of friends. It's worth it for that alone. I'm just surprised that she doesn't get murdered by Miss Marple in the film, and that's the twist.
That's about us, yes, for this time.
For episode 3, we're going to do something a little bit unexpected, aka a book that I would never read and Andrew would never read, but we're not going to reveal it right now.
No, I think that what we're going down the route of, because next month will obviously be end of June.
Yes.
So I think we're going to be going for a kind of rom-com, which, you know...
No, not for me.
Kirky will love, but love.
For the sake of our podcast, yes, we are going to do it. We are going to read something that neither of us would ever read, watch a film that I personally would choose to watch.
It won't be that bad.
Have you seen it?
No, I know. I've got in my locker. I have the books prepared for you.
I'm just hoping.
So it'll be a nice surprise.
Has like 2.5 space between each line, you know, and it's only 100 pages long.
So yes, romantic comedy of a sort.
You can guess what
next
it is.
Month. So we will see you then.
Farewell.
Farewell.
Bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed that. Didn't happen in the book.
Yes. Because it didn't happen in the book.